So yeah, Maharaj, thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to hear your experience of this historic occasion, which happened now 40 years ago. And we would be very happy to hear your experience, your involvement also to bring Narasimhadev here. So please tell us with as many details as possible.
Just start from day one. Okay. The story begins in Shida Mayapur in India, when a very small murti or form of Nrsimhadev, actually Prahlad Nrsimha, was given as a gift to the leader of the German Yatra at that time, Harikesh Swami. He gave him as a gift, and he was graciously received. And at that time, I was requested as Harikesh Swami's assistant to begin daily worship of this very small deity, about this size, made of what in English I think we call soapstone. It's a kind of soft stone. You'll find images commonly in India available. So I did that. I was traveling. We were, the two of us, traveling together quite much in something in India, mainly here in Europe, of course, including Germany. That would have been in 1979. Meanwhile, and I don't know the exact sequence here, but search was going on for the farm, and I believe Sachinanand Swami Maharaj has described that, how they found the place. And the question was then, which deity will be the main deity of worship here? We already were worshiping Shri Shri Radha Madan Mohan in Schloss Rettershof. They had been there since, I guess, 1974 or 5. Well, I'm not sure of the year now. But in any case, they had been... There was very nice ongoing worship led by Ashtarata Prabhu. But the question was, who should be the main deity? And the feeling was that because this new farm was so close to the Czech border specifically, it's in the corner of Germany, which has... it's three borders, actually. There's Germany, there's Czech Republic, and at that time still Czechoslovakia, I think, and Austria, about 10 kilometers away. And because at that time there was still what we was known as the Iron Curtain between the East European and West European countries, with a definite, you can say, ideological boundary as well, and considerable political concern. The Cold War had been sort of grinding on for so many years, decades really. The feeling was it would be very good to have the Lord present in the form of Nrsimhadev, who is known for protecting his devotee, Prahlad Maharaj, as we call him. So he would inspire the devotees. At the same time, there was a sense of need of protection also within Germany, because of the ongoing troubles, especially the government, the media, were making against the mission of the Krishna consciousness movement of ISKCON, considered as a quote-unquote dangerous cult, eine Sekte. And this had been going on, especially since 1975. So the feeling was, oh yes, this small deity of Nrsinga with Prahlad sitting on his lap, why not have him appear in a large form? And it was a small group of us who discussed this, and this was kind of the natural conclusion we came to. This was in Schloss Reddershof before moving here.
So you were in India, you got this deity, then you came back, and in Schloss Reddershof there was the discussion happening, which deity shall be installed.
Yes.
And meanwhile, the devotees were searching for a place for... When, what was first, the decision to have a farm or the decision to have a new deity, so to say, for the Chervi Yatra?
The decision to have a farm came first.
That was first.
Yes, it was clear at that time there was a sense of need to have a place of, well, the talk of self-sufficiency was there. All of this was happening, again, 1979. This is approaching the ominous year 1984. There was a sense that because this novel by George Orwell said that everything is going to come crashing together in 1984. So there was very much this sense of coming apocalypse, perhaps. And this millennialism, you know, the sense that serious trouble is brewing. We have to prepare. And so we sought to move into some place where we were hoping we could sustain ourselves. We never use the expression, but in English you say, by the sweat of our brow. By the sweat of the brow. Anyway, some ideas were there like that, and ideals. Mind you, by a bunch of devotees who had absolutely no experience with farming or gardening or taking care of cows. But anyway, a lot of enthusiasm was there. So then the Singachalam farm was acquired. We didn't call it Singachalam at that time, but when we decided on the deity Nrsinga, we were inspired by a passage in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, chapter 8, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is leaving Puri and going south. He stops in a place called Jira Nrsingha Kshetra, as it's called in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where there's a deity of Nrsingadev, actually Varaha Nrsingha, but that's not mentioned in there. And we thought, that's a nice name. Let's call our new place Nava Jira Nrsingha Kshetra. Eventually, we changed that because that's really a mouthful. Nava Jira Nrsinga Kshetra. And besides, as I visited Jira Nrsinga Kshetra a couple of years later, before we installed Nrsingadev, I found that that name was nowhere to be found. No one was using that name. It was simply Singachalam. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, maybe Singachalam is better.
but you said that you visited this place before Nrsingadev was installed.
Yeah.
So there was a very short time that this place was actually called Navajira Nrsinga Kshetra.
No, it continued to be called for several years.
There you had already the idea this could be another possible name.
Right.
Because as far as I remember, the change of the name was even in my time in Krishna consciousness.
Mm.
It must be the 2000s, early 2000s. Or...
Yeah, it was several years later.
Yeah.
So let's see, where were we? So we decided, okay, we want to get such deity. Ashtarata Prabhu was sent to India. We had only a very vague idea. We had this small murti, and we had a sense that we want a large deity. I think we spoke in those days of 2 meters high. He should be big.
That would be huge.
Yeah. In any case, he was sent off. He went first to Delhi. He met a devotee from Kerala. And I believe together they went then to Kerala and went to Ernakulam, which is where the, what is it called? The government agency for arts of the state of Kerala is having their headquarters. There they were able to place an order. And then we waited. And we waited much less time than we expected.
Mm-hmm.
We really thought the way things went in India, such things, maybe it'll take 2, 3, 4, 5 years. Mm-hmm. Who knows? But it went very quickly, such that from the day Ashrata left from Germany to the day a big wooden box arrived here, just a few meters from where we're speaking, was 14 months. It was a little over 1 year.
But had Ashrata Prabhu some specific instructions? Because you said you had just a vague idea. You had like the blueprint in form of this small deity, which was already Prahlad Nrsimhadev, which is interesting. So you wanted Prahlad Nrsimhadev also.
Yeah.
So this was clear from the onset. And were there some more specific instructions? You said actually you wanted a 2 meter big high deity or tall deity.
Yes.
So how came it about that he turned out to look as he looks now?
I have to say I don't know further details because I wasn't involved. I presume the Stapati who took charge for making the deity, he had his own understanding of what the deity should be in terms of Shilpa Shastra and so on. And there may have been discussion with the devotee that Ashtarata went with. I never got those details.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, so then the deity was here. The temple was not yet ready. The temple construction was a bit of a adventure, and there was, I would say, a bit of comedy involved also. There was a bit of, let's say, back and forth with the local government officials regarding building permission. And long story short, it all worked out in such a way that we could essentially do what we intended to do, was to build, to transform what was a barn, which was quite dilapidated, built, I think they said, in 1917 originally. The ground floor walls are very solid stone, but everything else wooden was quite in bad shape. So then we had to design this temple without making any structural changes. And that was a challenge.
So you had to keep the original structure and just rebuild
the essential structure had to be maintained. Therefore, you see in the present temple room a big pillar sort of right in the middle of the temple.
Which is not really necessary or...
Well, we probably could have found some way to avoid it, but Yeah, it is a natural place in terms of structural strength and so on to have it. But and then the way the deity room is, the Garbhagriha, and the sort of L-shaped arrangement of two deity rooms. One reason for that, major reason, was because Srila Prabhupada, when he was asked, would it be possible to have, could we worship Lord Nrsingadev? He specified, he said, yes, you can worship, but he must have his own temple. Initially, we thought, own temple, that means completely his own structure. And later we came to understand, well, temple doesn't have to mean the whole structure. It can mean the Garbhagriha, the what we usually call the deity room.
Or can we call it Sanctum Sanctorum?
Or Sanctum Sanctorum, yeah.
That would apply, this term would apply in our terms.
Yeah, so we understood actually that is how we can understand it, and therefore we designed. But somehow I was asked to try to come up with a design, because I had studied, but only for a very limited time. I had studied architecture at university, so I was a frustrated architect with a chance to do something. And so I made various sketches, trying different things, but nothing felt right.
So, and you were the leader of the construction place, so to say? You were the main communicator with the workers, or?
Well, I wouldn't say that. I certainly, I got involved at certain times when I saw that it was necessary. otherwise, the temple president, Kripa Rama, who was overseeing. But there was an interesting little interlude, you could say, at one point, while I was working on different drawings, the news came that Surabh Prabhu, at that time, or was he a sannyasi, in any case, that he would be coming to visit. And Surabh had been the designer of the Vrindavan Krishna Balaram Mandir, the Juhu Temple, and the Pushpa Samadhi in Mayapur, and also the Prabhupada Samadhi in Vrindavan, I believe. So, very talented designer. And he was coming here to visit, and I thought, great, he can tell us what to do. he'll give us some idea. So he did come, and I sort of cornered him, got him into where I was having some drawings. And I said, you know, it's really, we're really challenged by this, what to do. I said, you know, I've made 10 different designs, and we're just not getting it yet. And he just laughed, and he said, 10? That's nothing. You have to be ready to make 100.
Oh.
And that was all he said. He didn't want to get into it at all. He just said, you know, keep going, keep trying.
So what was what is the challenge? Where to put which room? Because you said the structure was already fixed, so you couldn't be innovative on that point. So where was the...
Well, one of the big problems for us was where to put Srila Prabhupada's Vyasasa. Because we kind of understood, okay, we'll have Nrsingadev facing, well, south, and we'll have Radha Madan Mohan facing east. Okay, one place, the other place, we kept thinking. And then somehow this idea came. I think it was Harikesh Swami's idea to just put Prabhupada in between the two altars, not facing the deities, but facing out. That was kind of radical.
Yes, yeah. I heard that some senior devotees have a serious problem with that. Say Mahacharam, no, Prabhupada is not facing the deities, so...
Yeah.
But what to do in such a situation, right?
Yeah, we just didn't feel like we had any other... That just felt like the right thing in this case. And so we did it. And then from that point, I think everything started falling into place. And the more refined elements, the choice of marble for the floors, and the wood paneling of the ceiling, and all of these things. Mainly that was Kriparama Prabhu. He actually had very good taste for these things.
It's a beautiful temple room. Timeless somehow or other.
Timeless. The mirrors on the ceiling the raised portion sort of between the two altars, the part of the Kirtan Mandap, as it would be called, that raised portion, I take credit for that. Yeah. I just felt it needs to be a raised area. And I don't remember if it was my idea. I think maybe as all of us together, we felt we need to have mirrors to increase the sense of height, especially in the deity room, in the Nrsingha deity room, because it's rather small there.
Some years ago, you told the story that how you communicated with the workers. They wanted to build, and then you had this idea and you rushed out that no stop, it has to be like this. and you told it in a lecture, I think, during some festival, and I asked actually this question to you,
I just told it a couple of days ago.
Okay, I probably wasn't there then. I just remember some years ago, and I asked you, why is it like this?
Yeah,
and you just pointed and said, don't you see it? Actually, it's true.
Actually, I didn't talk to the workers. I talked to Kriparama. I said, you go and tell them. He was kind of indifferent, like, well, we can do that, but why bother? And I got a little excited and insistent, and he said, okay. And it was like minutes before it was going to be otherwise too late. That was part of the humor of the whole thing. And then also with the deity room, the platform, is quite a complex form, and quite utterly incomprehensible to the construction workers. So even though I had made detailed drawings, it didn't make any sense to them, I had to explain.
Did they know what they are doing? Or could they know? Were they allowed to know? Or how was that?
I think there was one worker his name was Sepp, I remember. And he would kind of spend more time with the devotees. And there was even a while when I think after all the construction, he would come by. And I guess we did communicate with him more than the others what we were doing. Yeah. But for them, they're getting paid. It's a job. What's this? I don't know. It doesn't matter.
And was it then when the temple opening was happening that these workers actually came with their families and their old Bavarian mothers, Manita Prabhu told them like that they were involved in the opening of the festival we built this temple and grandmothers who were going down because it's like a church and
that was these things were happening.
It was interesting cultural combination here.
Yeah.
I think both sides were quite amazed, amused, and shocked by each other.
It's such a seemingly anomaly having a Nrsingha temple in Bavarian forest. But then again, now he's here, it's like hard to imagine him not being here.
And how was it? We heard the stories from different devotees, but we'd like to hear also from you how Narasimha Dev came here, because it's said, the legend goes, that the driver could somehow or other not bring him directly here. And mm-hmm. he put him, actually, Satchananda Maharaj said, in Passau in some storage place. And
yeah.
can you tell your...
I don't have another story. I somehow at that time I was pretty clueless what exactly was happening. All I remember is suddenly there was this big wooden box in the driveway here.
Mm-hmm.
Just there he was.
Okay.
And then because by that time I had been asked to kind of oversee the worship of Nrsingadev when he would be worshipped. That meant I needed to oversee preparations for his worship, and that meant preparing dress and ornaments. And so I managed, we brought him into this one kind of storage room, as was mentioned the other day. I hadn't remembered, but it was actually a storage room for candles.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had this ornamental candles business at the time. So he was brought in there, and I was able to create sort of a workshop in the corner of that storage room.
I heard this was under the stairs in this one Grihastha flat, opposite of the temple entrance. Of the side.
And that was later.
Oh, later. So where was...
My workshop moved... two or three times.
So, but where was Nrsingadev first? You brought the box then, in which?
Let's see. This building, which is sort of long and narrow, which is now four apartments,
mm-hmm.
right over here.
Yeah.
that was not apartments. It was one kind of storage room on the I don't even remember if there was an upper floor. I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was just this storage room, and there was a door on the north end. So yeah, we set up a little workshop there, mm-hmm. and I had a bit of experience as a child and as a teenager doing all sorts of things with handicrafts of various sorts. And so for me it was an opportunity to bring out some of that samskara. And I started sort of making ornaments, and I started studying about working with silver, and I was able to put together some fairly good tools for making jewelry, for making ornaments. And yeah, I was reading books. I was collecting materials, including semi-precious jewels. I thought would be nice to have not just plastic, but some nice things. I even went one time to Sri Lanka with a devotee who had been doing business with semi-precious stones from Sri Lanka. So he took me shopping with him one time. To avoid, you know, he said it's very easy. The tourists always get cheated. So he was able to make sure we would get the right prices for moonstones and granite and like that. I went also to New Vrindavan to learn some techniques from one lady, a devotee, who had been making ornaments for their deities in New Vrindavan. Very expert, using mainly copper and gold plating. They had quite a setup for gold plating copper, which is not something we ever did here. But I learned a little bit of techniques from her, how to make ornaments. Yeah. So that was all in preparation. Meanwhile, the temple construction was going on. And then it was 1982. Initially, Shishi Radha Madan Mohan were brought into their new temple, the altar for them from what is now the guest house. They were worshipped there on the ground floor for 2.5-3 years. And I mentioned before this interesting relationship with the local government about building permission. So the final building permission that we needed to properly begin construction, theoretically, we hadn't actually waited for. We proceeded without it, mm-hmm. quietly working. And 2 weeks before, just 2 weeks before bringing Radha Madan Mohan in, we got the documents granting permission to construct.
So everything is legal.
Yes.
Afterwards.
In Nachhinein, you say.
But I want to rewind, actually. What was your experience or your impression when you saw the Lord the first time? So you had the box. You were the first who opened him?
Myself with, I guess, a few of us together. We opened him. Yeah.
And what was your experience there? Can you remember that and your impression?
I was surprised. This particular form was kind of not what I expected, because one sees different forms of Nrsingadev. And I was struck by the uniqueness of his form, certainly. I was... The issue of Prahlad sitting on Nrsingadev's left lap did not come up immediately. I don't remember when that was.
But was it not like order? Did you not know? Because you said you had this small one there. Prahlad was there also on the lap?
Well, he's... Or? Yes and no. He's kind of there in that position. But yeah, this again, I don't... I can't say exactly what was going on. And yes, that one would like to say, yes, well, he was ordered like that. Was that wrong to do so from the start or what? And then another question could come, because this small, small murti is very small, and Prahlad is much smaller.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Prahlad?
Mm.
Or is it Lakshmi?
Right. Mm.
We kind of all decided it's Prahlad.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, so somewhat surprised and just, I can't say what. It wasn't really a sense of awe and veneration, maybe because also he wasn't yet installed. He was there was a sense that he's not fully there, and that, of course, is what we understand is how installation is about. It's you have the form, but the Lord is not yet present until he's installed. Also, as we see him now, he's very dark, almost black stone. But when he first arrived, he was not oiled. So the stone was very gray, maybe even greenish,
mm-hmm.
Sort of a lighter shade.
It's granite, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, certain. I don't know the name of the granite, but a certain kind of granite.
like traditionally, deities, many deities are made out of this black or dark granite, or all these ancient deities also.
Yes, you'll see in India, all such deities are all, I mean, it seems like they're made with some sort of black granite. Probably experts will say, well, there's varieties of black granite also.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah, and it was very clear from the very beginning, this deity is very heavy.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how could you manage to bring him from A to B in the first place?
I'm trying to remember. Did we make the little wagon for him in the very beginning? It may have been like that. Somehow I don't remember that. The deity and the zoko, the base, were separate, of course. So that made it more manageable in some sense. But I can't remember, did we make, I'm inclined to say no, we didn't make, later, certainly we made this little cart, you know, with wheels, which then I think there are pictures where he's being rolled up a ramp on to where he is now. Little wheels are there. Yeah. That was later.
How heavy would you guess he is, actually?
The deity himself is around 700 kilos, and the base is around 300.
Okay.
So around 1 ton altogether. Right. And we knew he's heavy. The word guru means heavy. So we understand he's heavy. In the figurative and also in the literal sense. And so we knew also that when he's installed, he's going to need proper support underneath, that the floor doesn't crack or whatever. And so underneath him, there's a support that goes down. I guess it goes all the way down.
A pillar. Interesting. So he stands directly on a pillar. So there is, in that sense, no chance for that the floor can break in that sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
We'd have to check now. I know it goes down to the base of the main floor, whether it goes below that or whether there's a wall underneath that. I can't remember now.
But you made special, you took care that nothing can happen, because this was also a point in the interview with Gaurakesha Prabhu, when he said there are two kinds of deities, ones who are unmovable and ones who are movable.
Yeah.
And he said here was actually the first time in ISKCON that an unmovable deity was installed according to all the traditional principles. And then I asked him, but are not unmovable deities installed in a way that they will really never move? So, but here Narasimha Dev is on the first floor, and normally he should stand on the first floor on the earth, because then he can never move. So at this point I asked him, he said, I don't know what you said actually, but that is okay.
Yeah. He said it's okay. Yeah. Ritually it's all done, you know, at least that. Yeah.
Okay, so maybe we come now to the opening of the temple, 1982, and there, before we start, we hear from you, there was also confusion on our side when actually the date was.
Oh.
Because there were different assumptions, and interesting, Ramananda Gopal found out that in the year of the installation, it was Purushottama Mas. And at that time, it was not directly after Radhastami. It just switched, and then in the following year that you put these dates actually together. Can you confirm that?
All I can say is when we decided to make it an annual festival, Brahmotsava, all I remember is we decided, let's make it convenient. Mm-hmm. We weren't so worried about the actual date.
Mm-hmm.
And it was decided, yeah, let's make it the day after Radhastami.
But according to Ramananda, actually, it was the actual date when you take out Purushottamasta and it jumps
That could be the case, yeah. I don't think we were so intentional.
Okay, then
somehow.
Divine arrangement.
Yeah.
So you prepared the Lord, you made all the ornaments until the day when the installation happened. And so maybe you can tell us now about the installation itself and preparation for installation.
The preparations were quite extensive. I think it was myself who first found out about Gaurakeshava being so knowledgeable about Pancharatrika Vidhi and installation. And so we thought we should do it properly and he would be the right person. So we contacted him and he agreed and he made preparations, which he described in quite some detail before he came. And he must have also given us some directions of things that we should be prepared with at that time, but I don't remember details. All I remember is there was a very mood of excitement. This is really going to be a special event, and devotees are going to come from all over the yatra, if not all over Europe, if not from further away, and it's going to be a big festival. And indeed it was. Yeah, there was the collecting of water. I remember Gaurakesha mentioned that, kept waters from different places. And that was like, yes, we'll do it. You know, send devotees, send the call for waters all over. And they were collecting. And of course, right here, half an hour or so away, we have the famous Danube River, locally known as the Donau. It's one of the major rivers of Europe. And more than that, though, we are at a Triveni. It's the Donau, the Inn, I-N-N, and the Ilz, two smaller rivers, but it's a Triveni. And so we understand, yes, this is a special place. So getting those waters and getting so many others, I don't know, maybe we got some also from India. Just a lot of collecting of different ingredients and materials. There was certainly a sense of a spirit of cooperation. We're all in this together and we're committing ourselves to worship the Lord in his form as Nrsingadev, and that was exciting. Yeah.
And how was your experience during the installation, and especially when the Lord was then called, and especially when the eyes were, or this wax was removed?
Well, it was very exciting. It was, I don't know what to say. There was quite an amazing energy. There was such a build-up. And I think Gaurakeshava Prabhu was especially expert. He has a flair for drama. And so there was a definite build-up. Of course, the whole installation went over a three-day period. And he explained and walked us through what are we doing next, why are we doing it, and why we need to do certain things, and so on. So that when the time came, Netron Milanam, the removal of, or the opening of the eyes was, it was a kind of grand finale, but it became, in a sense, it was like one grand finale after another, after another. and that was quite something. So, yeah, I felt like, okay, now the worship begins. Now it gets serious. Mm. We've talked about it. It's an interesting thing to plan something like this over a longer period, and then going from the initial idea and then going through so many stages, some questions and challenges and doubts and delays on the way, but still going, moving in that direction, and then finally it happens. It's quite satisfying, I would say. Yeah. It was also, I think we should keep in mind, Radha Madan Mohan were there, and they had been worshipped for several years. And the mood of Radha Madan Mohan worship is arguably very different from that of Nrsingadev. And there was some concern also that isn't the worship of Nrsingha going to kind of, and the mood and his presence going to kind of overwhelm and overshadow perhaps the mood of Radha Madan Mohan? And that became a kind of ongoing issue after Nrsingha was installed. My personal feeling was it's not a problem. I felt rather that there was an interesting contrast, but there was a kind of balance at the same time. Architecturally, I felt there was a balance. I didn't feel that Nrsingha was overwhelming visually or whatever. In terms of mood, rasa, and so on, I felt there's some sort of complement. I can't explain it further than that. Somehow that my own point of view on that did not prevail. And as we know, Radha Madan Mohan moved to the other side of Germany, to Goloka Dham. We have to take it as their will. And I was thinking the other day, who knows, maybe one day there will develop a tradition. There's in Vrindavan, there's this idea that there are three deities, each of which show a particular special feature of Krishna: Madan Mohan, Govinda, and Gopinath. Each show a special feature, and I never remember which, but there's the chest, the face, and I guess the feet. Feet, chest, face, and that if possible, one may want to have darshan of all three deities in one day, which would mean going to Karoli to see Radha Madan Mohan and then going to Jaipur to see Radha Govinda, Govinda Dev, and the Gopinath. Govinda Gopinath is there. And then the Radharaman temple, they claim Radharaman includes all three. You don't have to go anywhere. But there's I don't know if this can be related, but there's a sports tradition in England, a kind of challenge to, within a 24-hour period, to climb the three tallest mountains in England and Wales, and Scotland, England, Wales. So people like to take that challenge, and it's quite a challenge. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking maybe there will be a similar challenge, have darshan of Nrsingadev and Radha Madan Mohan in the same day, and maybe a third, maybe Lord Jagannath in Berlin. Any case,
was it from?
These are my idle thoughts.
Was it clear that Madan Mohan will move, or was the discussion that Nrsingadev will move? How you came up with actually Radha Madan Mohan?
No, it was always. It was always a question of Madan Mohan moving, but not necessarily moving away from Singhachalam. Ideas initially were that they would get their separate temple here. Possibly a temple up on the hill, you know, lots of ideas were there. Where was the money? Where was the building permission? Okay. And then this facility became available on the other side of Germany. So somehow I wasn't involved in these decisions.
Yeah, this was then 96, so a bit before, right? It was 96 was the installation of, oh, they're moving.
Couldn't do move. Yeah.
As far as a room or where they stood, that's what they
did. Yeah.
So for the end, would you like to share your personal relationship with Nrsingadev, especially because you were one of the first pujaris here, and the importance of Nrsingadev also in our Gaudiya tradition?
Well, to this last point, I always find a comment sort of implied by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his, I believe it's in his Navadvipa Taranga, what is it? Navadvipa Taranga something poem, that we worship Nrsingadev with the aim that he may bless us, that he may purify our hearts, so that we can properly worship Radha Krishna. And it seems to me that he is alluding to this verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, the famous Om Namo Bhagavate Narasimhaya Namaste Jas Tejase Avirbhava. Vajranaka Vajadangstra Karmashayan Randhai Randhai Tamo Grasa Grasa Om Swaha Abhayam Abhayam Atmani Bhuishta Om Kshaum. So this Karmashayan, the desire for karmic results, essentially, please remove this desire, is, as I see it, kind of the core of the of that prayer. So Bhaktivinoda is, in this sense, saying, we worship Nrsingha, he will remove that impurity in the heart, opening the heart to be a receptacle for the Lord's grace, that we can see Radha and Krishna in the heart, that we can worship them. And again, that's why I liked the compliment of Nrsingadev and Radha Madan Mohan here. So, for Gaudiya Vaishnavas, that's my understanding of why we would worship Nrsingadev. Bhaktivinoda Thakur installed the deity of Lakshmi Nrsingha in Mayapur. And I think it's very much in that spirit that we worship him. We're not keen to go to Vaikuntha planets other than Goloka Dham. We follow Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was worshipping Nrsingha. Specifically, I mentioned at Jiyata Nrsingha Kshetra. And the fact that Krishnadas Kaviraj notes that is somewhat significant, or maybe very significant for us. Also, I would say, if you look on a map of Europe, actually, Singhachalam is right in the middle. We're very central here, geographically. And there's a sense that Nrsingadev is sort of extending his mercy, extending his protection all over Europe. And I have the sense that devotees all over Europe have that sense. They feel there's some security because Nrsingadev is here. And they like to come here on special days and celebrate and, as we say, recharge their missionary batteries and so on. So I feel some sense of fulfillment that I've had a small part to play in serving the Vaishnavas, in facilitating by doing some service for Nrsingadev.
Okay, Maharaj. Thank you so much for giving us your account on this historic event.
That's what I'm remembering.
Yeah.
After 40 years, a lot of memory fades.
Yes. So we try to preserve as much as we can now.
Yes. Yeah.
When you are all around. And
well, we're still kicking.
Yeah. And yeah. As you said also, that every temple has its own Purana or history. So we
Stala Purana.
Stala Purana. Yeah. So we have to keep something now with this digital or this modern media for the future.
Yeah.
It will be it's important.
Yes. So, and it's very good that you are doing this.
No, it's as a service for the temple it was.
Yeah, it's part of the history. Stala Purana.
Stala Purana.
And generations from now they will be looking and saying
exactly, yeah.
Just see how they were doing and thinking in those days.
Exactly, yeah. It's very important. Oh, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.